Second Echelon, episode 149. I'm Noah Williams.
And I'm Connor Stewart.
And today we're digging into the dynamics of whether or not you should get on a team, what kind of team you should get on.
And then how should you go about doing it?
How should you go about doing it? There's a process to that. We get this question a lot, though. And I remember what I was going to say now. I want to apologize up front if it's a little bit slightly echoey in here today. We are freshly moved into our new office and podcast studio. Woo. So give us just a little bit more to get some soft things in here.
Yeah, we'll drop some items in here and your echo will be long gone.
We'll be good. But at any rate, yeah, one of the questions I get perhaps most often as a coach, particularly this time of year, and as this episode comes out, this is probably a little bit late, all things considered, but still relevant. Particularly for local teams and amateur teams and stuff like that, it's not too late to get on a team for 2023 or anything like that. If you're trying to do something more of the development or above level, it's probably too late.
A little bit late. September.
Generally speaking, yeah, these things, the typical window is August to October.
Yeah, it's August, September.
And as we release this, it'll be, just actually probably ringing in. No, it'll be this week. Yeah. So end of October. Yeah. It's usually goes something like, hey, Noah, do you think I should try and get on a team for next year? Like just point blank. And that's not really the question, is it?
No.
Because if you're asking that question, chances are pretty good, and this isn't true for everybody, but chances are pretty good that you are already emotionally invested in the idea of getting on a team. And you think that that would be better in every way, virtually, for your participation in this sport. In many ways, that idealistic version of a team that you're looking for does exist. There are teams out there that are very good, but the tricky part is that teams come in a lot of different shapes and sizes and compositions, and you kind of want to make sure you're involving yourself with a program or a team or a group of individuals that have shared goals and things in common and things along those lines.
I think the biggest thing is that making sure your teams...
It's like in your context.
Yeah, your team, the races that they aim for, the way that they do their group rides on weekends, their expectations of the team members, and especially to new members, align with your goals and ambitions for the season.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Relevancy.
Because the team should have goals.
The team better have goals.
And if you're in the process of courting or having a conversation with a team or vice versa, they're interested in you, that should be one of the first things that you ask. What is the team's focus? It may be regional stage races. It may be national stage races. It may be state championships. It may be the whatever they're calling the Pro Crit Series now. It may be the Joe Martin Gila Redlands scene. It may be you're only interested in doing races in a certain state or of a certain discipline.
The UCI mountain bike scene in the United States, the UCI cross scene in the United States.
Right. Or like a team that we work with here in Texas, as an example, Texas Devo is a junior development team at the state level. And they're focused on the Timbra mountain bike races, particularly the spring series. So the spring mountain bike season. And then they also take the kids to some national caliber races in the spring and in the summer. And I think that includes nationals. And so that's great, right? But they're explicitly not interested in the high school racing stuff. And they do support, but aren't particularly personally interested in other disciplines outside of mountain bike racing.
Right.
Now, that's not to say that you can't be on Texas Devo if you do other disciplines or you're interested in doing other disciplines. You can. It's just that the team was built around the mountain bike side of things. And so as a road-oriented athlete, that might not be, if you don't do any mountain bike racing whatsoever, Texas Devo
is probably not your team.
Might not be a good fit.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's just that just like an individual needs to have a discipline, you know, mountain bike, track, road, whatever, pick your thing.
A primary.
A team needs to have a primary. And that's not to say that members of that team can't go off and do whatever, but Elevate is a road team. Elevate is not a mountain bike team.
Right.
Guys showing up to mountain bike events is potentially terrifying for everyone on the start line, but not necessarily the focus of that athlete, right?
Yeah. Right. And that's another great example, and we'll probably end up talking about Elevate quite a bit today, insofar as that, Coach Mario is on that team, kind of heads up that team for the most part. We've also got Reggie, one of our athletes on there. We've also got Justin Greenfield, another one of our athletes on there. We've also got Luke
Ferris,
one of our other athletes on there. Gabe is going to be riding with them next year. And
spoiler
so,
warning. No? Is that news already out?
I don't know. That news isn't already out. But at any rate, it's not. I'm gonna spin that as it's not really news insofar as that I just want to brag about how much we love Elevate and how much we get to work with them.
Yeah.
Now, that's not to say that we at a coaching level are involved with all of their strategic operations or what races they choose to do or anything like that. It's quite simply that like half that team also is either a coach with us or coaches by us, coached by us. Yeah. So, and that's a really great program overall. Road oriented, elite regional national type performances. You're gunning for the win at the domestic or at the local level. And so there's a whole lot of stuff in between that, right? There's collegiate teams, there's actual pro development teams, there's actual pro teams. And then there's a whole host of different things. And so in your context as a listener, whatever community you're in or whatever discipline you're involved in, those are going to be the teams that are well represented there are going to be the teams that you are probably going to want to pick from.
And you don't just have to do one team either. Lots, and it used to be a lot more common, but it's once again becoming common that you have riders on multiple disciplines. So, you know, having a off-road team for you to do cyclocross, mountain bike, and enduro with, and then having a team to do road and gravel with, generally I find that's the split.
Yes.
Road, gravel, and track with, that is a viable solution. There are teams that do it all.
Well, Celine's a great example of this, actually, because she would do, state for gravel, and then also, like previously, Rocks Over Wolfpack on the road.
Yeah.
And then we've got plenty of other athletes that have done this before, too.
You should still have a primary discipline. You should still have a primary team.
Right.
But having multiple teams isn't out of the question at all either. Yeah. Having that support in that community.
No, that really comes, it really, being able to be on multiple teams successfully simultaneously is going to require your priorities to be clear. It's going to require your schedule to be clear and very proactive. And it's going to require you to have a good character and good sociability, good communication, so that you can accurately represent two different entities in the two different contexts.
Yeah, let's be clear. It's more work.
It's definitely more work.
Yeah.
It's definitely more work. And that's one of the things that I kind of want to get into today is the amount of work that's involved and some of the cons that come along with being on a team that aren't necessarily obvious before you've been on a team.
And no one's going to tell you going in.
And the a number of people that struggle with these things and don't even realize they're struggling with it because it's all they've ever known is sort of shocking. But basically, you want to choose a team that's sort of, or choose among teams that are racing in your community, in your discipline, and generally speaking, share your goals for the season. Beyond that, it's important to understand kind of what level of team you're looking to be on, because the higher level of a team that you look to affiliate with or represent, the more obligations and the more work and potentially the more downsides are potentially more risk are in the mix, are part of the conversation. For instance, if you join a local club team, like a Violet Crown here in Austin, for example, you can get some kits. I don't know if they do any kind of entry fee reimbursement.
You get a shop discount.
Shop discount.
You know, discount on various XYZ sponsors.
I'm pretty sure they get free chamois butter. Yeah. But that might just be a purple and yellow matchup thing. I could be wrong about that. It's more community centric, which there's a lot of merits to that. I mean, I think first and foremost, I think this is where I wanted to go at the very beginning in terms of when you're choosing a team, you should choose a team of people that you want to be around.
Yep.
That you feel like will help push you forward and be good influences in your life and share your values at an individual level.
Right.
So getting into a team that's community driven is usually a pretty safe bet, because cycling, a big part of cycling, even for us, is the people you meet along the way. I mean, it really becomes your entire social circle in many ways. And we've done podcasts about not having exclusively friends that ride or race bikes, but and you shouldn't. You should have friends that are
normal,
quote unquote, normal people. Yep. But at the end of the day, this is a powerful way to build relationships, and getting on a team that, because they have cool kits and they get free bikes and they get free entry fees, maybe isn't going to cut it if the whole team is of unsavory character.
Right. Or even has enough unsavory characters to create consistent drama.
Even a little bit of drama.
Even a little bit
sometimes.
Of drama.
Right. There shouldn't be any.
This is a sport, guys.
Yes.
It's like a fun thing.
We all opted into this.
Yeah, right.
Voluntarily.
No drama needed, please.
For most of us are grown people.
Physically grown.
Physically.
Physically grown. Yeah. A lot of people running from their emotional growth in cycling. Maybe that's what creates the team drama. Maybe it's just a dynamic of groups of people existing. Yeah, I'm sure that in any sport, in any group of people, there's bound to be groups with drama, but you should avoid it.
Drama is not good for your long-term cycling ambitions.
Anything.
Drama will burn people out.
Drama will burn people out. Yeah.
And the reality is that your time is valuable. You know what I mean? If you start bringing drama home, and that impacts your experience and your attitude outside of the cycling context, well, now you've got a really big problem.
Right.
So
now the hobby that you got into to enjoy is having a negative impact on your life. And
right.
Oof.
Right.
There we go.
So starting at like community level clubs, even, there's going to be virtually no obligation. You might not really get anything other than
a group of people that you like.
A group of people that are cool.
It's a great place to start.
Which is a great return on investment.
It is. Put in nothing, get out friends.
Yeah. That's the magic of clubs. Like, definitely for that. I'm definitely, like, even if, even at a starting point, like, if you've never been affiliated with a group of cyclists ever, like if you've just pursued this, trained, ridden, Strava, QOMs and KOMs, participation, maybe you've done a Fondo or Unbound or something like that, but you've never, you know, like, I don't know how to talk to the team. How do I get on the team? Like, well, right. you can just join a club. That's the point of a club. You just join it.
Sign up.
Right.
Sometimes there's a small
There's a lot more clubs than there are teams. It's starting to, it's been dwindling for a while. There used to be hundreds strong clubs in every city virtually. And to some degree, they still exist. They're just smaller now. So you should absolutely join a club at a bare minimum, just to, as long as, you know, you like those people, you have a good experience with whatever shop or business it's affiliated with. Most of the time it's going to be a shop. You know what I mean? I'm not saying like if this shop screwed you over and that's the only place that has a club in town that you have to join it or anything like that. But the point is that regardless of your cycling ability or your experience or anything like that, you, again, put in nothing, get out friends, right. Get out community network, yep. Get out resources.
All you got to do is show up to the whatever group ride they inevitably host, you know?
Absolutely.
It's that easy.
And nobody's going to give you crap for not showing up.
No.
It's a club. Everyone's just happy to see you there.
Yep.
That's the whole
point. Everyone understands if your Saturday morning needed a different priority.
Right.
Occasionally, you know, not
right.
A big deal.
Right.
Teams, however, though, usually come with obligations.
So there's usually going to be a break off of that club, the upper level guys that will band together and form a team.
Yeah.
And they might even wear the same kit, but it's the racing team.
Yep.
The racers. The shaped leg guys, you know what I mean? Like, whatever. And this is, I think, kind of a great example of where things already start to go wrong.
Just immediately.
Yeah. Like, you don't, it's okay if you, as an individual, don't want to race. But racers shouldn't look for a reason to delineate themselves from people that don't race.
Mm. Yeah.
Especially in the context of a club or a club team.
Right.
And a club team, for me, is different than a team, is different than a racing team.
Yep.
Is different than a development team. And yeah. But it is, those are the levels of stratification, roughly speaking. You've got club team, racing team, development team.
Professional team.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah, there's tiers of that, but once you get there, it's all.
Juniors and masters delineations of all of those.
Right.
But we've started with club, which is zero investment, and you get community network, friends, support.
Yep.
A lot, like, great return on investment.
Yep.
Then there's the club team, which
usually is fed by the club. Yeah, you get races, entries, paid for, kits.
Were you on the club team at Joe's Pros? What was that setup like?
That was just it was literally a masters team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it was a masters team, and then we had a juniors team, which is kind of weird usually that that combination doesn't exist. But yeah, no, just two of us, a whopping two of us on the junior team, and then they had a pretty stout masters squad actually for quite a while.
When did you start racing with them?
Oh man, Richmond picked them up and joined the team, built the team. Train the team when I was 11.
Mode CBD. If you haven't tried CBD before or haven't used CBD in a while, you should definitely check out Mode CBD. Code ECHELON20 for 20% off. This is a proprietary formula, all organic from the ground up, made here in the USA. Not a white label product. This is a family owned and operated from bud to bottle. Outstanding. Got some right here with me right now. You know, reduce stress, anxiety, help you get to sleep, help you relax. If you got some soreness, check out Mode CBD on Instagram and their website. This episode, it's going to be Echelon 20 for 20% off your Mode CBD order. Thank you, Mode, for your support. And y'all go pick up some of this topical roll-on. It's going to change your life. Mode CBD, code ECHELON20 for 20% off your order. Element is everything you need and nothing you don't in an electrolyte supplement.
1,000 milligrams of sodium, 200 milligrams of potassium, and 60 milligrams of magnesium in each and every satchel. We're going to be doing a giveaway of some bottles and some variety sample packs on Instagram very soon at Williams Racing Academy. So check it out over there and stay tuned for some Element giveaways. Thank you, Element, and stay salty.
That's when I started racing red bikes.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah. And that's when that kicked off pretty much. Found that shop in San Antonio, found Joe,
mm-hmm.
Joe the pro.
Yeah, man.
Yep.
That's wild. Yeah, that was a real person.
That's an actual human being.
No, I remember Joe's Pro Bikes and those awesome orange kits.
Those orange kits.
Yeah, man. About as orange as my amino energy right here, like a candy corn. It's great.
Yep. Just highlighter.
Easy to pick you up the road.
Yep.
Yep. But so what is the club team part really involved? Generally speaking, these are still pretty low obligation. There may be some kind of like you need to buy a couple kits.
Sometimes they'll have,
maybe they'll give you a couple kits and you have to wear those.
They'll have a volunteer obligation occasionally.
That's pretty typical.
Whatever program they're supporting.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's with the affiliated junior program. Maybe it's with the Fondo event that the club hosts. Maybe it's with the race that the club hosts.
Right.
It could be a number of different things. It could be a volunteer obligation with a sponsor. Right. Yep,
there's a lot of that.
And that's not to say that you're going to have all of these. These are just all of the examples of the types of things that, right, again, come along with the obligations. As we go up in performative level, we're going to go up in obligations, and you'll see our return on those investments scales quite differently depending, right, on what you're trying to get out of it. So at a club team level, still pretty minimal obligations and volunteering, probably going to be at like the most expensive this would be that you have to buy a couple of kits and that you have to pay a club membership fee or a club team membership fee, either way, and that you have to pay your own entry fees still. And like worst case scenario, that you have to buy a team bike, but that would be like just connected with a real asshole shop. Most of the time, you're just going to get a discount on whatever the team has chosen as their quote bike.
Right.
And then half the guys will have it and half of them won't.
Yeah. Usually the bike requirement can't happen on that club team situation, but that'll begin to happen really as you get to just a team.
That usually depends on how closely tied the program is to a shop and how well supported that shop is. Because
that brand,
at the club team level, they're generally not going to mandate that you buy a bike.
No.
They may give you one, or they may offer you, strongly encourage you to buy one at a strong discount.
You have a loaner.
These kinds of things. And so that's just kind of something to take into consideration. Your best bet is that at this phase of racing, that level of team, that there's no bike anything at all. Being given a bike sounds really cool on paper. We're going to get into why that maybe isn't so cool, in practice. I'm doing okay on time.
Just, yeah, we're doing good on time.
And you will probably have, again, this is if a club has a subset, a squad of people that race, that team, that squad is going to have not super specific, but probably super specific goals about which races that team is trying to do well at in particular,
right,
during the year.
Yeah.
And so you want to make sure that, generally speaking, that those, whatever those races are, line up with your schedule and line up with your...
That they're on your calendar.
You know.
They're in the side of whatever training plan you're putting together.
That they're in your taste of racing, that you actually enjoy those races.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like and those kinds of things.
And that if they're a focus for that group, that you're able to get some of that variety of racing in previous to showing up to your team's A event for the year.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. All those things.
And then there may or may not be meetings. There may or may not be a camp.
Yep. Yeah. And then obviously, the higher you go up, especially in sponsorship levels, the teams begins to give you loaner bikes, or you have entities that are giving the team large amounts of money, you are going to be obligated to show up to that sponsor, usually, hang out at their headquarters, volunteer at whatever non-for-profit they support, you know, take pictures with the CEOs, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Depending on the caliber of the sponsor.
Right.
So going up from there. Oh, okay. So let's debrief quickly on the return on investment for that. Still pretty good,
still pretty good, I would say. Yeah.
In that very little obligation in. Yeah, there might be some money involved. You might be able to participate in that team for free if you've done a good job representing yourself and you perform reasonably well at events and you like showing up to events with some regularity. There's a good chance that you won't have to pay a membership fee, that you will be given a couple of kits, not all of the clothing you need, but a couple of kits, and probably have some entry fee support. So what we kind of discussed earlier at this level financially is the worst case scenario. The best case scenario is that you get discount or reimbursed entry fees, a couple of kits, and perhaps a discount on a bike.
Yeah.
And that's about it. In return, you'll get, you know, still access to that broader club community, but starting to have an actual team of guys or gals that are going and racing together and building that next level of camaraderie and building that group race craft.
Yeah.
And building that group strategy, that group intelligence, the ability to execute as a group, and deeper understanding of each other's strengths and weaknesses, deeper understanding of how the other teams stack up against them. And that whole process is just really fun, especially when everybody's motivated and training well and showing up regularly and stuff like that. And that's, I think, really where the ideal starts to begin in context for most of our listeners and for most of our clients, is that you really just want a couple of teammates in your races that you can count on and that you like. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, you have a desire to work for and who have a desire to work for you come the time and the right scenario.
Right. And I think it's important to point that out, that that's really the core, I think, of what we're looking for as individuals when we're thinking about joining a team or having the feeling that we want to join a team or the aspiration to join a team. That's really the core of it. And that doesn't have anything to do with whether or not your entry fee was covered or whether or not you were given bikes or kits or if you were paid anything.
Right. All the material XYZ can kind of be tossed out the window. Your first priority should be to find a group of people that you like.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's become a more popular thing in the last few years. And there are some merits to it. And I'm gonna give it with a couple of caveats, but the reality is that you can just get 2, 3, 4 of your friends together and do a custom kit through Jackrew.
I've done that several times.
And now you have a team. That's it. That's it. That's really it.
It worked great. I mean, it's fun, especially when you get a group of guys like that and organize the team yourselves initially, those first few years of it being together and y'all
so fun
punching together. Oh, it's a great time.
It's a great time.
Yeah.
And that is the shortest route to getting what we're really looking for in terms of camaraderie, in terms of a little bit of insurance and support in races from other, you know, people in your jersey, in your kit that you can count on. And the caveat that I'll add to that, because the problem with that is, back in the day, the reason that we didn't have stuff like this as frequently largely had to do with the difficulty of getting custom kits made, but also had a lot to do with that clubs and teams were much bigger, they were more diverse, there were more of them, and it was a much more difficult proposition to be competitive in Cat 1-2 level racing or even certain masters races without legitimate team representation. The teams just dominated those races. It was very difficult as an individual to make a mark.
Show
you know what I mean?
Show up and consistently execute anything.
When you've got 4+ teams showing up with 6+ riders each,
who know each other well and
are well trained, yep. even at the Cat 3 level, like, I mean, you got to be a real heavy hitter solo in the threes to be a consistent performer with that kind of team representation and depth. So naturally, everyone just kind of gravitated toward the teams, and the teams offered virtually all of them free entry fees. Virtually all of them. How did they do that? We've talked about this before, because it used to be required that every team host a race. So that would put a race on the calendar, and then the proceeds of that race would fund everybody on that team's entry fees for the year. And so if everybody does that, we've got a calendar full of races and everyone gets free entry fees. Wow, that's cool.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So, but that's not really a thing anymore, unfortunately, because of they changed the regulations and teams just generally started fading in their representation.
Well, and watch the collapse of the local road racing scene.
Right. And I'm very confident that it'll come back, but the only issue with kind of making these little mercenary teams, like we just talked about, getting a group of your friends together and just taking out a custom kit with Jackru and then going and smashing whatever races it is y'all want to smash, doesn't really help solve our calendar problem. It doesn't really help solve the scene problem necessarily. And that's not to say that it should be everyone's problem necessarily, but if you get to the point that you're actually inquiring for sponsors and looking to do races that are perhaps outside of the state, I would encourage you to try and redirect some of your energy and effort toward a local race in a supportive fashion beyond just purchasing an entry fee. And moreover, even considering hosting your own race if you don't do anything else in the industry. We've hosted lots of races before, and it's great. It's always been great for the community. It's always been great for the coaching family. It's a very difficult thing to do consistently, especially if you have a lot of other stuff going on like we do. And of course, everybody does. But the point is that if you have time to recreationally seek and represent sponsorship on behalf of yourself individually or for your smaller group of teammates, you have the time and energy. That's all it takes. And that's all as much anybody else ever has to put a race on the calendar.
And not only that, but obviously it's going to hugely benefit you and your team.
Hugely. Hugely.
That's an easy sell.
It's an easy sell. So that's kind of the underpinnings for the next level of stratification with teams, and that is just a basic team.
So let's go up another level. Development team, Devo team.
Well, we've kind of skipped racing teams at the local level. Almost talking about teams like Elevate, right? Because Elevate's not a development team, nor are they a club team. I mean, I think they might even technically be a club team because I think they have a club.
They do have a club.
Yeah. But there's a level of teams here that may or may not be associated with a shop that is entirely focused on racing.
Talking about what people like to call national elite teams.
Something like that. Yeah. And it could be
air quotes around that.
Yeah. Air quotes, national elite. And so basically any, you know, if there's a team that's entirely comprised of, we've got fours, we've got threes, we've got one twos, we've got masters, and we've got juniors. If that's the way it's built, that's basically a racing team. Because those are all skill and age categories of racing, right? Now, in this context, depending on whether or not you're affiliated with a shop, you may have obligations, right? If you're affiliated with a shop, you may need to buy kit. You may even be, again, strongly encouraged to buy a bike at a discount. You may be provided a bike, or there may be at this level still no consideration or accommodation made for the bike whatsoever, but you will be required to wear their kit in the discipline that they primarily race in. And moreover, this is the level of team where it starts to be a problem if you don't show up to the races that the team has said that they're targeting.
I was going to say, you're probably going to have a minimum race requirement for the year or a minimum attendance requirement just for a specific number of races per year, if not specific events, as well as showing up consistently to your group ride, shop ride, whatever it is that the team hosts that's associated with the kit that you're wearing.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And so this is where the obligations start to be worth considering very hard. Because, again, coming back to if the team is, if you like everybody on the team and their kit's cool and they do well in races, but they need you to show up to like 8 or 12 specific races that may involve some travel for you, and maybe they're not really offering any reimbursement or help with that travel, and you know, maybe you've got kids and other things you like to do on certain weekends, and maybe you don't want to race that much, or maybe you don't want to be obligated to travel out of your way for, or travel out of state for certain things. And this is where you kind of have to start to weigh that, because some folks would just say, yeah, I'm okay with that, and then flake out in on like short to medium notice, yeah,
creating drama.
But that's exactly that. It starts to create drama. You know, you're really letting your teammates down at that point. If that wasn't something that you communicated clearly and honestly from the get-go, and you're not going to improve your standing on the team with that action, with that behavior, and that could jeopardize your ability to participate with that team in the future. But moreover, why would you want to affiliate with a team whose goals aren't really perfectly aligned, or their values aren't perfectly aligned with yours?
Yeah.
And so there's a real balancing act there to take into consideration, especially if, say, you're, for instance, kind of going up a level as on an example here, but it still kind of applies, is that like if you're looking to really push yourself to reach the professional level in Europe, you may not really want to get on a team that's focused on doing crit stuff domestically.
Right.
Because the amount of crits that you have to show up to and travel to and race in are going to significantly impact your ability to train properly for what goes on in Europe.
Right. Or to show up to the very few races that the teams in Europe that you want to get on pay attention to here. The what, one, two, zero?
Yeah, zero. Zero. Nationals is about it. But
yeah, yeah.
Nationals is a golden ticket no matter what.
There's one.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter if you did worse than third. You just may as well not have showed up, to be honest, unless you're looking to get on it from a European team's perspective.
From a European, yeah. From
yeah,
a European,
if you didn't get a top three at national, your Europeans don't care.
Right.
Period. Third, they kind of make an eyebrow.
They almost don't care.
Yeah, almost don't care.
Almost can't be asked to care.
Okay. The kids from Montana show up? Like, no shade to Montana, but I don't know.
Yeah, no. I get you.
You really want to make sure that, the goals and the schedule of the team align with what your personal ambitions are, and make sure that the amount of racing that they want to do aligns with what you want to do. Because this can also go the other direction. Like maybe you're a very active athlete, right? And we've got people who with jobs and kids that race 30, 40 plus times a year.
Yeah.
No problem. But if the team that you're looking to get on is kind of relatively inactive compared to that, like maybe they only show up to local crits, or maybe they just do some of the local stuff. I mean, and you're interested in doing bigger and better things. Do you want to be the only guy from your team represented in those races? You know what I mean? So you really want to get to what the team is actually going to be doing, what their intentions are, not just what you've seen them do,
right,
but from their perspective, what are they trying to do as a team?
What's their intent?
Right.
How organized are they?
And
is it random? Is it well communicated?
And the more support that team has, and the more serious that team is, the more obligated you will be as an athlete to stick to the team's regimen.
Yep.
And your autonomy in terms of control over your schedule
begins to die.
Begins to start to dwindle.
Yeah.
I mean, at that point, it goes from, you know, it's generally not going to be more than like 50% control, I would say, at this point. Now, when you start to get to the development team level, one level up from there, then your control over your schedule drops to like 30%.
But at the Devo level, the Devo teams, the support they receive, their choice of calendar is all very intentional, very specific.
And highly variable, unfortunately. I mean, there's a lot of Devo teams out there that you have to pay to be on. You are obligated to buy the bike. You are obligated to buy the kit. You may receive some support in terms of entry fees and travel.
You need to come to both training camps per year.
Right.
You need to show up to the group ride every week. You need to show up to this, you know, thing.
There's four out-of-state stage races.
Right.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
And so you really have to make sure that, you know, when you start to get to that level, that, again, the team's goals, schedule, ambitions, and so forth actually align to propel you toward whatever your ultimate goal is, because somebody covering your entry fees and giving you a bike doesn't actually help you get to a higher level of racing. It may feel like it does because this is expensive and difficult and your bike hasn't shifted right in a while and you probably just need to bleed the brakes or swap brake cables or something like that. Or maybe you just need fresh tires and a fresh chain, but you're thinking like, nah, this bike's clapped. I need a new one.
Right.
And I need somebody to give me one because I really can't afford one with the way bikes are right now. And God damn it, I didn't get third at that local stage race this year. Somebody put me on their team. No. The reality is that when you start to get into development teams or elite racing teams, the level of obligation is very high because presumably everybody on that team is taking things serious. And that's not to say that they're not having fun, because you can have fun while taking things seriously. You know what I mean? Like poker, for example.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's not really a silly goose time, but everybody agrees it's a lot of fun.
Right. I mean, anything really, you know, like at it's rule number one, have fun. But
I mean, sports in general,
everything,
you know what I mean?
Like, we show up to take seriously. We show up to win.
This is probably a good point to point out that a good time to point out that at the elite team and development team level, the maybe the gravel vibes start to kind of die.
Yeah.
Like, it's really, we're having fun if we're doing well. We're not having as much fun if we're not doing well.
Right.
And if you're not showing up trained, if you're not participating consistently, if you can't make it out to the races that we said we were going to do, or you're always showing up with dirty kit or holes in your kit, or the bike that was provided by the team is always dirty, or you miss races, you're sick all the time, you're injured all the time, you can't keep your bike upright.
Whatever, you know, your story is.
Whatever it may be, you know, that starts to be a big problem at this level. And we're not even into the professional leagues yet.
And ultimately, that team can find someone that does have their shit dialed, who trains, who has their bike cleaned when they show up, who is a good representation for that team and involved in the community around them. Mm-hmm. And they're gonna drop you and they're gonna go with that person. Sorry.
Right. Because it really starts to be not just about your results, but also about your overall athletic ability and your character and things along those lines, your marketability as an individual and an athlete, and so on and so forth.
I mean, the team needs to survive. The team needs to be able to get results and have team members who are, you know, most likely present on social media, good representations on that front as well. And, you know, if they don't have that, the sponsors are going to be uninterested. And then we have what goes from a development team who's trying to, you know, go somewhere, move to the next level, take athletes to the next level. And it's, you know, if it's filled with wankers, then it's never going to make it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. There has to be some, at that level, there starts to be some mutually agreed upon standard, hopefully explicit, but maybe implicit, unfortunately, of performance and appearance that you have to maintain and uphold. Otherwise, they're not going to keep you around, and you're not going to feel welcome, like you fit in, like you're being supported, and so on and so forth.
Probably not going
to
be a great vibe.
Not a great vibe. Yeah. Awesome. On that note, I have to take a quick pee break and platinum call, and we'll come back and wrap this puppy up. Jack
Crew, as always, the presenting sponsor of the Second Echelon and the main supporter of all things cycling, Williams Racing Academy, Belgium Racing Experience, you name it, because every time we're on the bike, we're in Jackrew clothes. Jackrew makes it easy for us to express our creativity through designs, frequent iterations. They get the product to us fast. It's always high quality, and the service is absolutely top-notch. I'm not sure why anybody is still dealing with once a year, twice a year team kit orders. It's got to be a thing of the past. Jackrew does it right. Jackrew takes all the stress out of ordering cycling clothes and puts the fun back in. There's 2-week delivery, free online design tools. You can put together a kit yourself. They'll pair you with a professional designer to bring your kit to life for free. You can order whenever you want. Other people can order your stuff, whether it's a team, you know, an event, a business organization, whatever you may be doing. Jackrew is the place to bring your kit and technical gear dreams to life. I couldn't recommend them any more highly. Let them know we sent you. Big love to Jackrew. Thank you as always for your support. The podcast is, of course, brought to you by Williams Racing Academy. That's the core service here. Connor, myself, my dad, Mario, we are full-time cycling coaches. This is how we pay the bills. So if you are curious about getting going with a coaching training service for your 2023 season, get in touch with us today. No goal is too big or too small. As long as you have somewhere you want to go, we want to help you get you there. And we have the experience to do so in a healthy and sustainable predictable manner. As long as you're willing to put in the work, we will absolutely get the rest done for you. Get in touch with us today. Let us know what your thoughts are, what your goals are for next season and beyond, and we will start putting together our roadmap to make those dreams come true. That's what it's all about here, whether it's losing 50 pounds or riding 100 miles or angling to get your first pro contract or whatever your goal may be. We are here for it. Let us know. Unbound Leadville Nationals, you name it. We do all of it. Doesn't matter the discipline. Get in touch with us. We'd love to hear from you. And let's make your 2023 season the best one yet. Belgium Racing Experience. Next year, we are happy to offer what we are colloquially referring to as bucket list spots for primarily our inner family members. But if you are outside of our coaching family, you are welcome to get in contact with us. We'll see if we can get you a spot settled. But in addition to our elite race program in Belgium next year and our junior racing sessions, we are also going to be having family members. And when I say family members, I mean coaching family members, Williams Racing Academy coaching family members, and the ability to bring their significant others and families along with them for a vacation style experience in the context of a racing team in Belgium. You'll be able to see all sorts of things like the Roubaix Velodrome and the Tour of Flanders Museum, as well as watch many races. And if you are so inclined, we will absolutely align opportunities for you to race yourself. You can check out the breweries, check out the local cobbled climbs, and generally drink in the history and the culture and the wonder that is on offer in the Flanders region. So Belgium Racing Experience next year, whether you are an elite athlete, a junior looking to take your game to the next level and expose yourself to new opportunities, or one of our family members who is just interested in having a couple weeks getaway in Europe with everything taken care of, you know, we'll do all the cooking for you and so forth, and just enjoy a little bit of a cycling racing vacation. Yeah, what do we think? Talk to your significant others, talk to us, get in touch. We'll see if we can make it happen in 2023. BelgiumRacingExperience.com, at Belgium Racing on Instagram. And if you're curious about how to get in the coaching family to get on the list for this, head over to WilliamsRacingAcademy.com and click coaching services. Get in touch with us, free consultations at any time. Thank you so much. Last but not least, we are brought to you by Yellow Rose Cycling Wheels. This is another amazing service we are happy to offer within the family. Oscar Salazar has been in the WRA coaching family for a very long time now. You should expect absolute quality and service. And that's what Oscar is here to deliver. You're going to get an amazing set of wheels built exactly the way you want at a very reasonable price, and it's going to be maintained for life. That's the way it works. All here in the family, Yellow Rose Cycling Wheels. If you are looking to upgrade your wheels or get a new set built, highly recommend you check out Yellow Rose Cycling Wheels, yrcwheels.com. That's yrcwheels.com. Get started with a consultation and building your next set of wheels today.
And welcome back. So, quick recap. Above the club team level, you've got regular teams, which are mostly racing-oriented, but maybe aren't going to have any type of performance expectations of you as an individual or from a team's collective perspective, maybe aspirations, but not necessarily clear-cut strategies and plans to get there.
Dreams, not goals.
Yeah. Aspirations. and that's fine. Like, you can still have a lot of fun doing that. A lot of people would view developing strategies to achieve lofty goals as sucking the fun out of it, or, you know, some people, it just doesn't resonate with them. They don't really identify with it. It's probably not going to be that many listeners of this podcast, but I promise that you, as you go around and talk to people about what they like in terms of their team program or what their team may be about, sometimes you're going to get a lot of like, oh, we're not really into the racing and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's not necessarily to say that they aren't into racing, because like, racing's fun. What it is to say is that they're not trying to hold themselves accountable to any level of performance.
And that accountability sucks the fun out of it for them.
Exactly. Yeah. And, everyone has their right to come at this from whatever angle they want. Like, sure. I don't really have a problem with that, honestly.
No, not a problem at all.
So you just want to make sure that, like, most of the people on it, you figure out what camp you're in, whether you're in that camp or whether you're in the camp of, like, us, where it's like
personal development.
We are going to set lofty goals. Right. We are going to be accountable to it. We're going to have a clear strategy to get there. We're going to talk about why we fell short of that if we did, how, and how we're going to fix that, and so on and so forth. And we're not going to, like, we don't beat people down about it or anything like that.
No. I mean, it's not the way this actually functions long term.
It's just about being honest, right? And about committing and, committing to your goals, committing to yourself.
Committing to yourself.
Right. Yeah. And personal investment in development. And you want to really figure out what the temperature of the team that you might be looking at, or the teams that you have the options to potentially court or join. You know, are they more of that ilk, or are they more of the less accountability, more vibes kind of ilk? And again, I don't cast judgment either way.
Oh, they're both hugely fun.
Yeah. We have friends across the spectrum.
Yeah.
I don't coach everybody I know.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
I coach most of them. But not everybody.
But not everyone.
Yeah. And that's fine. And I think that's kind of the delineation, is like, at a team level where people do race regularly, it may be the kind of team that isn't really interested in holding themselves accountable. And to be honest with you, there are teams that perform at a very high level and that still maintain that. Now, a lot of time they're kind of old mercenary types or 30 middling somethings that are riding a high level of performance from their early to mid 20s that just understand that they're not trying to go past Cat 1, but they don't have to have, you know, bona fide team meetings and look at their training plans constantly to ensure and have confidence that they're going to be able to perform at the level that is going to be necessary to have fun, which is competing well to them.
Right.
And that's where all of this kind of starts to match up in different ways for different people. And I think, like, the example that's coming to mind for me right now would be like CCR Roofing or 787 Racing.
Definitely.
As a local example, right? Like, they're not, they may have a team camp. It's not really for training. Training may be a byproduct of the camp, but they're not necessarily getting together to like structure out, today we're going to do 6 hours of endurance. Tomorrow we're going to do race simulation. And the next day we're going to do power testing. And the next, you know what I mean?
We do TTT.
Yeah. Like, yeah. It's not like that. And they may have pre-race strategy meetings, but it's not like, okay, you're going to go early, and then you're going to cover the counter to that, and then we're going to put you in the middle moves, and then you're going to bridge up from group two to group one. It, like, no, no, no.
So much.
No, it's like
much more
chill and casual.
Relaxed, yeah.
Yeah. So if that's what you're looking for, there that can be had. And if you're looking for something that is a little bit more structured, then there's also teams like Elevate, right? As another local example. And these guys are, you know, basically trying to put their best foot forward in every way and do the best that they possibly can, like kind of no holds barred, no excuses made. And there's a lot to be said about that too. Of course, that's why a lot of our athletes have gravitated toward that program. You know, they wear it proudly.
Yeah.
They're taking things seriously, not to the degree that it sucks the fun out of it. Ask any of those guys. They're having a blast. It's one of the best like team chemistries I've seen in a long time outside of our own teams, of course.
Right. It's a little off topic here, but having the fun sucked out of something because you're taking it seriously is kind of a misnomer. I think that's just a...
It is.
And obviously there's all sorts of levels of this, but yeah, the individuals that it happens to, it, you know, I think what's going on there is that you probably need to find something that you're more passionate about.
And yeah.
Not that, you know, go quit the sport or blah, 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 but like, you know, obviously this is great at all levels. It's fun everywhere.
I think it can also be a product of not getting enough good information fast enough, and your progress starts to stagnate in the amount of work you're putting in for the amount of results you're getting, the experience you're having and your performance you're having isn't worth the work anymore because the training isn't structured properly or you're working against yourself. You've got some other kind of limiting factor.
We've got an episode
on limiting factors. You know,
you don't need to progress in everything in your life all the time.
Maybe you're training too much and not racing enough. Maybe you're racing too much and not training enough. There's a whole host of things.
Right. Maybe you're focused more in other areas and this is just for fun. That's all peachy and great.
It is.
Yeah. That's just not. I don't really.
No.
I have a hard time. I have a hard time clicking that in my head. Everything I'm doing, I like to be.
Right.
Progressing.
Right.
That's just one of those things.
So at the team level, the hand holding kind of starts to slow down a little bit. You're not necessarily obligated to a whole lot outside of maybe camp and maybe a couple races and then probably hopefully to volunteer at the race that your team promotes. But then stepping up into a racing team or an elite team, a national elite team, something along those lines. You actually race on one of these for a while. I never have, actually. Raced exclusively on professional development teams, junior and U23.
Okay. Yeah.
No. And an amateur, obviously, when I was like 15 and under, Cat 3, yada, yada.
Yeah, I was Cat 1 for a year and a half on the road scene and was on a, you know, quote-unquote national elite team that would show up to road stage races and try to throw down the 1-2 fields.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and what was the setup there? Like, what kind of support did you guys get? What was the, in the context of the conversation?
In the context of the conversation, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, discount on bikes.
Mm-hmm.
With that came the obligation to buy a bike. You were required to ride the stuff we were on.
Good. I'm glad you actually have an example of that because I say that and I feel like some people listening to this might go like,
no, that's
the
thing.
They make you buy a bike.
They make you buy a bike. Yeah. Which is, you get the...
It's a great deal.
I was going to say, typically, when you're required to buy the bike, the deal you are given is really, really solid.
Really good.
Yeah. And so, yeah, it's a obligation, but, you know, nothing looks cleaner than a full squad all on the same...
Same bike.
Bikes, same helmet, same kits. Mm. Oof. That's so fresh. But yeah, so required to buy a bike.
Pro tip, you can achieve 50% of the same effect with just helmets.
Yes. Yeah. Much cheaper. A lot easier to get your hands on. Seven helmets at discount or just period.
I digress.
Yeah. No. Just got me thinking about it, right?
Yeah.
So
they made you buy a bike.
I bought a bike. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then what was that bike? What was the discount?
It was half off.
No, the numbers don't even matter
just
anymore.
Chop.
Everything's just doubled.
Right.
What was it, like literally a TCR with Durace or Altegra?
Red.
Red. Okay. Yep. So a TCR with
It was one of the masted C-post
Ooh.
TCRs, the SLR.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
Good. K. Can't fly anywhere with that.
Don't do it. Don't ever. Okay. Yeah. But purchasers advice here, guys. Yes, it's stiffer. Yes, it's lighter. Don't do it. Mast and seat post bikes are not of this world, and they should remain in whatever planet they came from.
Don't you have one right now?
I don't know.
Do the Trek Boon.
The Trek Boon's not a seat mast. It's a. It's got a seat. It's got a seat cap.
It's like a seat.
I guess it is a masted seat post,
it's
isn't
it's
it?
It's a seat tube condom.
Yeah, they call it a. They call it a. seat post cap.
Cap.
But it's big.
It's huge.
So usually masted seat post, you'll have a really short.
No, you have a lot of adjustability.
You have a lot of adjustability. It's, they come in sizes. But it is still a masted
seat post. It is
a masted. I bought one again.
They just made it play nice. So, yeah, you know.
It is really the engineering on those is definitely improved.
I'm pretty sure. I don't know. I haven't looked lately, but I wouldn't be surprised if Giant does still sell like typically masted SLR.
Oh, I haven't looked at their top of the line stuff. No, absolutely. Yeah, their top of the line stuff is,
still does.
Still does. I know they stopped back in, I think they stopped in 19 for a year of doing them, but I think they're back.
Oh,
yeah. It's one of those. Yeah, it's one of those.
Can't help it.
Yeah, it's one of those things they like.
It's so easy,
but it is lighter and it is faster.
And it costs us like $20 to just build on that extra crap in the frame mold.
Yeah.
And then you don't have to buy a seat post.
But from there,
what was the race schedule like?
Race schedule was Joe Martin.
Okay.
And then lots of local stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some. Yeah, and then they ended up taking a few guys to Nats. Ended up taking a few guys to Gila, but those weren't required. It was one of these situations where we had more guys than we could field. Yeah, and so, you know, they'd take 60 each race, so I ended up going to Joe Martin for them. Pretty small calendar. We did a lot of local road stuff.
But so this is another kind of bringing me to this next element I wanted to get into, like, at not usually at the team level, although there may be some discussions and some suggestions. There's not going to be any mandates typically, but when you start to get into the national elite level and racing team elite generally in any capacity, even especially potentially development teams, your role in the races themselves will be strongly encouraged to mandated.
Yes.
And so,
if you're trying to play as a good team member, mandated, really. I mean,
it is. Yeah, no.
And you should be there to work. You should be there to work for your team, and they're there to work for you.
But I say that very cautiously because that rarely is the case.
There's a lot of individual play, ego taking control of situations as opposed to teams
and
doing it in an organized fashion.
Yes.
Yeah.
And moreover, even when the teams are doing it in an organized fashion, the strategies deployed are often exceedingly subpar.
Yeah,
horrendous. And that can be really frustrating if you still have some aspiration of your own result or performance at a given race.
Right.
So, for instance, when you went to Joe Martin, how did that play out?
Honestly, it was a brutal one for me. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I should have been on a national elite team with the legs I had. I'd kind of just come back into the sport. Our designation, though, our kind of play for the weekend was with our guest rider.
Mm-hmm.
He was from Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Dude was quick. So our goal was literally just to stay forward in the chase and in the breakaway.
Mm.
And it's still typically with, especially with Joe Martin, there's one group up the road and there's main group.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't necessarily stratify from there. Sometimes it will.
Pretty predictable
though. Occasionally, especially in the lower fields, you will get where it blows apart and you have,
mm-hmm,
you know, groups of five and five and five and five.
Yeah.
But stayed in big groups, and it was just survive. And if we're put in a situation where pull needs to happen, something needs to be chased, something needs to be,
mm-hmm,
lashed onto, and I was present, I would do it.
Gotcha.
And we, you know, we all trusted our each other's understanding of being able to interpret the situation on the road and make a good decision.
Yeah. No, that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you have to cultivate that with chemistry, with race reps, and with just general like team camp and group training time and stuff like that.
Spending the correct amount of time in the force field as you're growing in your cycling
as well.
Life, and the correct amount of time in the threes field, the correct amount of time in the twos field, etc. But no, that one I ended up chasing stuff that we didn't want down the road. And I was able to do a fair amount of that. It destroyed me. One of the hardest, probably the hardest full weekend I've ever had on the bike in my life. But, you know, teammates especially, one of those things for me that if something needs doing and I'm physically present, I'm in. You know, we're gonna explode to make it happen. So, so I ended up doing a lot of chasing and a lot of surviving the TT, just barely. You know, but it was good. It ended up being a good weekend for us. I think we pulled third that year.
Okay,
yeah, our guy.
So relatively successful.
Relatively successful. It was pretty good.
Good.
So,
but at the end of the day, though, you were a bona fide worker.
Completely. Yeah. Completely. Yeah.
And that's the struggle part. I mean, of course you were down to play that role, as I was always down to play that role whenever it was prescribed to me. In context for me, it was on the national team at UCI races in Europe. And I say it in that way, not in a condescending manner, but in a how stupid can you be to be at the biggest races you've ever been at and to be readily willing to just completely hold your own race and give it up for a teammate.
I think it's a different
when you're in the same place at the same time.
Right. And it's a different thing because, you know, when you have a difference in level of ability, me to the guy I was supporting, it's a no-brainer, but that's not what you're dealing with on national team. It's a lot more even of a playing field.
To an extent. But at the same time, if my role is to protect Logan Owen,
right,
and Logan goes down, even though we're in the same place at the same time with 3K to go at the front of the field,
you don't leave the front of the field.
If
Logan's racing,
I mean, but it was my job,
right?
Like that was my job, and I gave him a wheel, and he went on to get like third on the stage or something.
Wow, and going out 3K to go and still pulled a...
I got him off the ground, swapped his wheel out, and shoved him off in about 6 seconds.
Early.
I don't think he knew what happened.
Yeah, right.
I just had to like navigate. There's still a lot of people riding around me in the middle of the field. But at the same time, if that's your job and you don't do that, you don't get invited back.
Yeah.
And that's it. The whole national team pathway is evaporated, which is one of two pathways to the pros in the European ranks.
Is it different if you go and win the race?
Yes, but I didn't have that level of confidence in myself.
Mm. Yeah.
So that, you know, you can kind of dissect that all you want. But like the point is that you have to be very careful about what role you will accept on a team and how that impacts your aspirations and your goals long term.
Yeah.
As another example, you know, we staffed for Dad and I staffed for Elbows at Joe Martin a couple years back in the pro race, and they all strong guys, but at the pro race at Joe Martin, which to be honest isn't that tall of an order from a racing demand perspective.
We were actually year I did it, our finish times for the elite men and the pro men groups were, and these are 100-mile races, they were within a minute.
Mm.
We were like 42 seconds off.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like.
Nah. So, but they brought 5-6 strong guys and, you know, most of them were really just surviving. Only, I mean, to Stefan's credit, he did a good job sort of laying out a strategy that was realistic for every individual on the team and tying that together into a cohesive team strategy My dad was there. Of course, I was there, but Dad and Stefan worked together in the capacity of developing a strategy for everybody. But even when you have a good strategy and good chemistry, and those guys did, and they were familiar with each other, and there were team bikes and all the things, you know what I mean? You know, the most of them were really just surviving, and there wasn't really a whole lot of like work to do. I mean, to Stefan's credit, he was riding the front and getting in some breakaways and stuff like that where it was meaningful to do so.
Yeah.
But I don't know how many times he's done Joe Martin at this point. Like, you know, he could probably do it with his eyes closed and his hands tied behind his back.
Right.
And I feel it would probably be about the same for me if I was in shape. And who knows, maybe I will be by Joe Martin next year. Although I don't know if I will care any more about Joe Martin personally. But as an example.
It's a fun race.
It is a fun race.
I'd go back.
Yeah. Yeah. At any rate, you want to make sure that the team's goals align with yours, and that moreover that you're at the racing team, elite team, national elite, and getting into the development team level, that your role on the team is at least somewhat understood coming into the mix.
Definitely.
Are they bringing you, because this team is going, if you're on track to join them, if y'all are courting each other, team and athlete courting each other for a potential spot, the team is going to have an idea of what that athlete's bringing to the table and how they would like to leverage that in particular in a racing environment. It may be that they're bringing you on to increase their depth on climbs. It may be that they're bringing you on to increase their depth in sprints. It may be that they're bringing you on to increase their depth or capacity in some other way, right? It could be in a more of a worker role. It could be in more of a developmental role. It could be more of like a, yeah, we're just going to let you get the ropes this year. There's no real expectations. Or it could be that, yeah, we're bringing you in because we need somebody who can lock down the end of these races. And so, you know, if you're already in the conversation, the reality is that you're probably qualified to do that. Otherwise, you wouldn't be having a conversation in the first place. But you also want to make sure that if you're, you know, on the rise and you're interested in pursuing your own results and performance, that you're not signing on to a program to be a worker bee just because you're getting free entry fees and free sunglasses and a free bike.
Right.
You know, and see, it's just something that you have to really be careful of. And that even at that level, especially when there's not paychecks involved, especially until there's a paycheck involved, you really want to voluntarily affiliate yourself with people you like and not voluntarily affiliate yourself with a group of people because of the benefits of being affiliated with that group of people. Mm,
yeah.
Until you start to get paid.
Right.
And then it's your job to cooperate.
The nice juicy maypole needs to be the actual individuals and your relationships with them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And even at the development level, you know, the top tier in the conversation that we're discussing today, bikes may or may not be given. Probably not given. Probably a discount, but probably not given.
Oh,
even at the development level. And there will be some type of support for sure for travel and for entry fees at this level, almost undoubtedly. At the true development level, and I don't mean just like some random team slapping development on their brand because they're interested in like guiding the growth of juniors or something like that. I mean, when I say development team, I mean a professional development team. And that doesn't mean that it's affiliated with a professional program. It just means the purpose of that program is to develop athletes to professional caliber.
Right.
As much or as close as possible.
Yeah.
And in order to do that, as we've talked about ad nauseum on this podcast, you have to do a lot of race reps and you have to go to big races. And that over time, year over year over year over year, ends up being the biggest real cost to this game.
Yeah.
Is the travel and the lodging and the time away from whatever it is you normally have to do and so on and so forth. And so there's going to be assistance there, but generally speaking, that's going to come with some level of obligation to whatever sponsor is providing that assistance. because that's just the way it works. And, you know, the more market value you have via your social media or other things you do, maybe you play music, maybe you do comedy, maybe you stream video games, maybe you whatever, maybe you build things, right? Maybe, like, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't matter. The more market value you have, the more diverse you are as an athlete, as an entity, the more likely you are to be picked up into a program like this, because you're going to be great visibility for the sponsors. And ideally, that following comes along with having at least a cultivated level of character, public facing, whether or not you're actually a good person, your private life is up to you, but you need to, but you need to at least have good PR outward, and no PR isn't good PR in the sport of cycling.
Right. I was going to say, just going back into obligation versus what you get.
Yeah.
Nearly done with that. The housing for races was paid for. The race itself was paid for. Required to show up for certain sponsors of the team to their HQ, take pictures, show up to X number of group rides that the team hosts. That's pretty much it from there.
Pretty much
that
it.
Dead ends. Yep.
Yeah. The obligations don't grow tremendously from there, other than you will be required to show up to the team camp. Your travel may or may not be covered to that. Probably won't be.
You get kits and shoes and helmet. You
will probably get kits.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shoes, helmets, pretty standard stuff. And entry fees covered to the races that the team cares about. Generally Correct. Speaking, not any race that you want to do.
Not any race that you want to do. That does happen on club team a fair amount.
I see the main
sponsorship that,
because they just want you to go do races.
Club teams will provide us.
But the more serious a team gets, the more they want you to serve the purpose of the team.
Absolutely.
And when the purpose of the team is aligned with your own goals and aspirations and pursuit, you're golden.
And you're being supported in the ways that you specifically want to grow.
Right.
And that's exactly what we're looking for.
And I think, moreover, the big takeaway for me, and that I would encourage everybody, every athlete, is to really maintain the maximum autonomy possible over your racing schedule and your obligations. Mm. Not that you should look to, you know, leech off of a team or anything like that, and to milk them just for their benefits and show up for the things you want to show up to and not show up to the things that you don't want to. But I mean that you don't necessarily need to affiliate yourself with a team that gives kits and entry fees just because. You can stick with a club team, race with your friends, go ahead and be the best person on the team. You know, you don't always need to be around people that are way, way faster than you. There's going to be a certain point where you find your equilibrium and competitive level in this sport and don't need to continue pushing on. And for a lot of people, quite frankly, that's the threes.
I was going to say the threes field is such a great spot to get to. And
you can be evergreen in the threes on 10 hours a week.
Right. And just hang out. And it's fun. It's fun racing. People show up fit. People are willing to hammer.
Right.
It's safe.
You don't really need to look to be getting into the 1-2s and getting into the elite teams that cover entry fees and give bikes and do all these kinds of things, unless you're really serious about ascending through the 2s and into the 1s. And that's not something that you do just based on points alone, which actually I think leads me to what one of our next podcast episodes should be, is like, when is the right time to upgrade?
Because I was going
to
say, that's
I sort of came to this new rule that I've been talking about, and I think I'm not going to share it here, and I'm going to save it for 151.
Yeah. The Noah rule.
Yeah. More practical rule for upgrading. But at any rate, on the teams, to wrap this up, basically, you know, make sure your values align, maintain as much autonomy as possible, and make sure you actually like the people. Make sure that they're doing the races that you're interested in doing, and that they're represented in the community that you're represented in and the discipline you're represented in. And you shouldn't just sort of pursue being affiliated with a team. There's nothing wrong with racing solo.
No.
Make your own custom kit.
Through Jackrew.
It's a great idea. But definitely look for ways to give back to the racing scene in which you participate and represent in. That's a big one. Beyond just purchasing entry spots, volunteer, promote, you know, put on your own event. It's not complicated. It just takes a little bit of time. And if you're interested in, you know, if you're already sort of pursuing personal or team level sponsorships, you have enough time and you have enough connections to promote a race. It's really not that complicated. So be sure that, you know, whatever team you're getting involved with or whatever team you start has some type of mission component behind it to give back to the racing community in other ways besides looking cool and going fast. We want this to continue going on in all manners. And of course, make sure that you're affiliating with a team that thanks the officials.
Yes. it's like treating your waitstaff.
Yeah, except for these people actually control your destiny.
Well, yeah, there's that. But just
and they're underpaid.
They're underpaid. It's thankless work that is difficult.
Yeah.
Just be nice to them, please.
Even though they may not like look fast to you, they know way more about cycling than you do.
Yeah, then you they've forgotten more about cycling than you will ever know about.
Have currently
cycling.
Absorbed.
Yeah.
So at any rate, I do like teams. Teams are wonderful. You know, we've started a lot of teams. We do facilitate a team program in Belgium with the elites over there. And there's a lot that goes into it in making sure that everybody's goals and personalities align at the outset, which is why we don't just have a team going on all the time, because we're really only going to do it if we can do it right. And there's a lot of teams out there that, despite their best efforts, and not to take anything away from them, but are severely hamstrung by poor strategy or poor character, poor chemistry, poor whatever. Yeah. Like, and it's a real struggle. I mean, I think we can all think of a team, unfortunately, like, this is so sad, but I think we can all think of a team that we don't really particularly enjoy rooting for.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I can think of like three or four, unfortunately. Like, and I don't want to be that way, but at the same time, you know, there are teams out there that do have a large following, and we either have to race against them, or we're dealing with athletes who are considering joining those programs as part of their goal or as potentially part of their trajectory. And then, you know, trying to handle that in like an agnostic manner from a coach's perspective and not let my personal bias get into the mix is a really tricky thing to balance. And so I don't want to come across as like anti-team or anything like that. It's just that I'm more athlete focused than I am team focused. And the only reason I'm going to be on board with the team is if everything aligns and checks out and is a good fit for that athlete. Right. Otherwise, maintaining your autonomy over your race schedule, over your training schedule, over all of these other things is pretty much critical to maintaining your peak level of fun.
And let's be clear again, just like we said earlier.
Unless you're aspiring to perform at higher levels and you're willing to trade those obligations for bigger and better opportunities.
What if you are not racing on a team and you want to race as an individual, you should still belong to a club. Find a group
absolutely.
Of people. To, right,
absolutely.
You know, still find your people. Still get your tribe. Still have your people to ride with. Right. Still have your connections and network and all that.
I mean, I'm pretty happy to say that we have a veritable club even in the coaching family. I mean, we don't have a racing team under WRA currently. But there are dozens of people out there that race in our kits.
Yeah.
And whenever we know they're going to be at a race together, I mean, we have some conversations about what the impacts may be and how to make sure we don't step on each other's toes. But, you know, we're really just a camp and a couple of get-togethers away from, you know, being a bona fide club outside of just being kind of a social community and recognition that, you know, if you make the personal investment in yourself to hire a private coach and a private trainer, and buy into a group of athletes that are all holding each other accountable mutually to lofty goals and setting high standards for each other, you make friends pretty fast.
Yeah.
Like, so, you know, It's just something to consider. There's more to it than just entry fees or discounts or free amp or bikes or
whatever. Yeah.
There's really a lot that goes into it. And it's not the kind of stuff that comes to mind when you're dreaming about what team you want to be on in the future. This is a conversation we have pretty frequently with our athletes, particularly those who are racing and at the team and up level, not so much at the club and club team level, because generally speaking, those are more, again, community driven, and it's more of like a family. You're not going to just leave your family just because somebody else offered you 20% off and you currently only get 10% off or something like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But when we're talking about, you know, really rising through the ranks, these are active conversations, and you kind of have to keep an eye out for what's coming down the road and what teams are in the potential hemisphere of consideration. You know, I've got juniors that race on Texas Devo, and we've got juniors that race on Cannibal. So there's a big spread there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't know what Cannibal Junior team is, Google Cannibal Junior team. All right. With that, we will close it down. We love you very much, and we'll see you on episode 150. We have something very special.
Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.